Okay. All right. Good afternoon, everybody. It is Tuesday, November 2nd, 1 o'clock. And we've been chatting here a little bit, trying to figure out what we want to do today. And it sounds like balancing chemical equations is it. So I think that we're going to start with a review of balancing chemical equations. And I'll give you my take on how to do that. And then we may use some of those balancing chemical equation things to maybe do some stoichiometry type problems as well. Maybe even some limiting reagent or percent yield type things with balanced chemical equations. So let me go ahead and start a screen share. And get into the iPad and Chem3 and some balancing chemical equation stuff. All right, so balancing chemical equations. As most things, I have my own way of teaching balancing chemical equations as I have most stuff. And I break it down into a bunch of steps that are reproducible steps. And so I think breaking it down into steps and having a process is always the best way to go. So let's take an equation that is unbalanced, and let's start breaking down into some steps. So I'm thinking about something that is I want a good simple one to do here. Iron usually precipitates. I'm going to do this with hydroxide. So this is going to be ferric nitrate plus sodium hydroxide. This might be a little more complicated than we need, but goes to form ferric hydroxide and sodium nitrate. And it's written in its unbalanced form. Okay, so the steps to balancing this. Number one, make a list of each element in the products and reactants. And make them in the same order. Count each element. Number three, we're going to start from left to right. And balance any element that appears in the equation no more than three times. If it appears more than three times, leave it alone. Skip it. Next thing is leave diatomics and monatomics for last. So monatomics and diatomics, these are things like O2, Cl2, maybe
S8, or things that are singular, like iron or sodium, that when they appear by themselves with nothing else around them, leave these types of things for last. Don't mess with these. These are the last things that you want to balance. Okay, number four. Number four really comes with other things. Number four is use a fractional coefficient. Hang on. Number four, let's call it chase the change. This I'll have to demonstrate, but this is a phrase that I use that means when you balance one thing and you throw something else off in the process, the next thing that you should balance is that thing that you threw off. So when balancing one element and a different element, is thrown out of whack or thrown off, balance the element that you just threw off next. It's this way of proceeding through a problem gives you direction. It tells you how to go through and solve the problem. And so that's what I mean by chase the change. When you change something, chase that change. So as you're changing that thing and the thing that gets thrown off, change that thing that just got thrown off next. And that allows you to find a progression of moving through the problem. All right, last two steps here, five and six, is for odd numbers of diatomics. Again, diatomics are things like O2, Cl2, F2, H2 is very common, these types of things. For odd numbers of diatomics, use a fractional coefficient. So, example. You need three oxygens and they come in O2s. So what we would do is we would multiply by 3/2, which equals three oxygens. So when you multiply 3/2 by 2, the 2 in the denominator cancels and you're left with three oxygens. It's a way of getting an odd number of something that comes in a package of 2. All right. But then the last step is to clear fractional exponents or fractional coefficients. And I'll have to show you how to do that. Okay, so I believe that's all the steps. So all the steps here now are listed out. Let's take this example that I was showing here and let's balance it following the steps. So the first thing we said is we make a tally of each of the elements. That would be iron, nitrogen, oxygen, sodium, and hydrogen. So we just list them out in the order in which they appear. And we do that on both sides in the exact same order. Don't change the order. Think about this as a dividing line between the reactants and the products. And then we go through and we count up how many of each element we have. So for iron, there's 1. For nitrogen, there's 3 times the nitrogen. So we have to think about how these subscripts multiply through and getting the right number. So for nitrogen, there's going to be 3. Oxygen is a little bit tricky because oxygen appears in two places. It appears here and here. So this is 3 times 3, which is 9, plus 1, which is 10. So we have to go and we have to count them all on the side. For sodium, there's 1, and for hydrogen, there's 1. We do the same count on the right-hand side. So now we've got 1 iron. For nitrogen, the nitrogen is only over here, and the 3 only applies to the oxygen, not to the nitrogen, because it's not in parentheses. So if something's in parentheses and the number is outside, it applies to everything inside. But when you have a 3 that is on the outside like this without any parentheses, it only applies to the element it is directly next. So nitrogen only has 1. Oxygen, we need to be a little bit careful. There are 3 there, and there are 3 here. So that's a total of 6. Counting is the biggest part. This is where things get messed up, is in the counting. Sodium, there's 1, and hydrogen looks like there's 3. Okay, so we've gone through and we've tallied all of the elements that are in the problem. And now that we've tallied all the elements, now what we go through and do is we start to change the coefficients, and you may only change the coefficients. So the one rule here, the main rule, is you may only change coefficients. Never subscripts. And by definition, a coefficient is the number that goes out in front of the whole thing. So you may not slip a number in between element names. The number may only go in front of the entire thing. So there's only 4 places that you can change numbers in order to make this problem balance. You may not put numbers anywhere you want. They must go in the very front of the reactants and the products. Okay. So after we figure out that, we start left and we move right and we look to see, is the element in balance? Is iron in balance? Yes. So iron's in balance, so we leave it alone. We go and we look at nitrogen. There are 3 nitrogens here. There is 1 nitrogen on the right-hand side. Nitrogen is out of balance, and it appears in the problem only 2 places. It's a perfect place to start. So what I do is I put a coefficient out in front that, when multiplied by nitrogen, will give me the 3 that I want. But it also multiplies by the sodium and by the subscripted 3 on the oxygen. And all of those things change. So sodium changes to 3, and oxygen changes now to 3 times 3 plus another 3. So 3 times 3 is 9, plus an additional 3 is going to be 12. So there's now 12 oxygens. All right, chase the change. This is where chase the change comes in. Oh, and let me show you one more thing. What I typically do is, when I change something, I put underscores underneath it to say, this is the first thing that I'm changing. When I put my second coefficient, I'll put 2 underlines. My third coefficient, I'll put 3 underlines. The reason that I do that is so that when you look at a static image, you could tell what it was that I did first, second, third, so that you can actually tell how I went through and solved the problem. Okay, so now I said chase the change. We balanced nitrogen. Nitrogen is 3 and 3. I would go and follow sodium, because if you look at oxygen, it appears in 1, 2, 3, 4 places. Oxygen appearing in 4 places, you should not mess with it, because there's too many places to make a mistake. But sodium only appears in 2. So chase the change, go and fix the sodium. Sodium, 3. That's the second thing I'm changing. That multiplies by the sodium, the oxygen, and the hydrogen. 3 for sodium, that is 3 for oxygen, plus 3 times 3, that's 12 for oxygen. And for hydrogen, it is now 3 times the hydrogen, so hydrogen is changed to 3. And if you look at our equation now, everything is balanced. 1 and 1, 3 and 3, 12 and 12, 3 and 3, 3 and 3. The equation is now balanced. And it took us 2 steps. Every equation
that you guys are most likely going to run into can be balanced in four or less steps. If it's taking you more than four steps, you're doing it wrong, or it's a really tough problem. There are a few problems that can take more than four steps, but most of the time, I would say 99% of the time, every single problem that's going to be thrown at you can be done in four or less steps. Usually three steps is a very common number of steps. If you follow the directions here and do it by these steps, okay? So let me just check in with you guys real quick and see how that example went. Does that follow along with the way that you've been taught to do them? Okay, so these steps are not new or unique, and I'm not telling you anything different than you've already heard. Okay, so if that's true, let's pick a couple more problems and do a couple more examples, and I'll show you some added complexities, how to deal with them, and then I'll show you how to simplify certain types of problems as well. So we'll give you some tips on how to simplify certain things. So let's do a combustion problem. Let's say that we want to do C4H10O. This is butane. It's butanol, but I have an oxygen in there. Let's do O2, and it goes to make CO2 and H2O. And let's do the tally, carbon, hydrogen, oxygen. This is a very common type of problem, a combustion problem. And the combustion problems are oftentimes balanced in a way that that saves the oxygen for last. This is diatomic, and we should save this for last. There's multiple reasons why you should save it for last. Number one, it appears in four places, 1, 2, 3, 4. So appearing in four places in the equation, it's very difficult to know where to balance it and to do it correctly. But because it's diatomic, when I put a coefficient in front of a diatomic, it changes only the diatomic. And because of that, it is a perfect thing to do last because it doesn't throw off any other element. So you balance the carbon, you balance the hydrogen, come back and you balance the oxygen last. So carbons, there are four, hydrogen's 10, oxygen's 3, carbon 1, hydrogen 2, oxygen's 3. All right, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through and starting left to right, carbon is the first element. It appears in two places. It's a perfect place to start, but notice that I have more on the left, less on the right. So what I'm going to do is I'll put my 4 coefficient on the right-hand side and change my carbon to 4. It multiplies by the carbon and the oxygen. Be careful when you count here that it is 4 times 2 plus 1 to pick up the oxygen in the water. This is the most common error, is people say 4 times 2, 8, and they go down and they write 8 when they really had 9. And so 4 times 2 is 8, plus 1 is 9, and I'm at 9 for the oxygen. The next thing that I would do is I would say chase the change, but because oxygen I'm saving for last because it's diatomic, I'm going to go back and start left to right again and just pick up the next element, hydrogen. And hydrogen appears in two places. It's out of balance. I'll balance it. I need a coefficient of 5. That gives me 5 times 2, which is 10. And then I need to start over to count up my oxygens. So it is going to be 4 times 2, which is 8, plus an additional 5. So 8 plus 5 is 13. So I've got 13 oxygens. Okay. Now I've balanced carbon, I've balanced hydrogen, oxygen is the last thing. And I need to figure out how many I need. I need 13 over here in total, and I've got 3. But what I think about is that this adds 1, and this adds X times 2. So what I really need
is out of this piece here, I need not 13 to come out of that piece. I need 12 to come out of that piece because 12 plus 1 is 13. Did that make sense? So when I add these up here, this is going to be 1 plus x times 2, which is going to add up to 13. And so I need x times 2 to equal 12, or x equals 6. And that's the coefficient that I use there as my third step, is 6 in front of the oxygen. So I make a small equation to calculate out how many I need, and back calculate how many oxygens I need, and then what coefficient needs to go in front. So with 6 there, 6 times 2 is 12, plus 1 is 13. I'm at 13, and I'm done. So the coefficients are 1, 6, 4, and 5. 1, 6, 4, and 5, and it took me 3 steps. Okay, everybody good? All right, let me show you one with a fractional coefficient. So let's change that to just butane. So let's change it, instead of butanol, let's change it to C4H10 without the oxygen plus O2, and that goes to make CO2 and H2O. Now, this is one where a fractional coefficient is going to be required. So same process, carbon, hydrogen, oxygen. Carbon, hydrogen, oxygen. 4, 10, 2, 1, 2, and 3. So I'm going to run through this one a little bit faster. It takes the same, actually. 4 is my first step for carbon. So that gives me 4 carbons. And it gives me 8 plus 1, 9 oxygens. I balance the hydrogens next. That's going to require my 5 coefficient. That gives me 10. And 4 times 2 is 8 plus 5 is 13. Now I can go back and I balance oxygen, and it's going to require 13 of these. How do I get 13? I do that with 13 halves. 13 halves times 2 is 13. But this is a fractional coefficient and really not allowed. So what I need to do is I need to clear the fraction. And the way that I clear the fraction is I take the entire equation and I multiply the entire equation by the denominator of that fraction. I multiply the entire thing by 2. That 2 multiplies by every coefficient. And then I rewrite the equation with the new coefficients. So I rewrite it to C4H10 plus 2 times 13 halves is 13. 13O2 goes to form 8 CO2 plus 10 H2O. And that is called clearing the fraction. And now we are done. And the reason that that works is because what you did is you balanced the equation with the fractional coefficient. So it was 4 and 4, 10 and 10, 13 and 13. When you multiply every coefficient by 2, you preserve the equality. It's like multiplying both sides. If I have A equals B, and then 2A is going to equal 2B, because I've multiplied both sides of the equation by 2. And so that's essentially what you're doing, is you're multiplying the entire equation by the denominator of that fraction. Oh, and by the way, that denominator should also be the same 2 as that guy there, because that's how we're getting the odd numbers, using that value there as the denominator in the fraction with the number that we want. And then we use that denominator again to multiply by the entire thing. So that's called clearing the fraction. And this is the only time that a fractional coefficient should be used is when you have a diatomic that is out here and you need an odd number of those diatomics, and it is just a tool to be able to get that odd number, and then you have to clear the fraction. But what that did is look at what it did. It allowed us to do, this was step number three, this was step number four. It allowed me to balance this equation in four steps without a whole lot of anxiety or frustration. And so that's the probably the biggest difference between the way that I balance equations like this and the way that you may have been shown in other places to balance equations like this, is using that fractional coefficient as a balancing tool. All right, what questions are coming up, if any? Did this make sense in terms of using that fractional coefficient? Yeah, we can do another fractional one. Absolutely. Let's see. Sometimes I'm good at creating them. Sometimes I miss. So let me think. I think octane, C8H16 plus O2 goes to make CO2 plus H2O. These are really good for finding those fractional coefficients. Combustion problems just tend to bring this about. Number one, because we're dealing with oxygen that's here. But so this is octane. And octane is the main hydrocarbon, which is in gas. There are many, many different compounds that make up gasoline, and gasoline from every gas station is slightly different depending upon where it was processed and developed, and the additives that they put into it are slightly different. But as the main hydrocarbon component that goes into gasoline, octane, H18, is the main gasoline that's in there. So let's again, carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, keeping them in the same order. Why don't you guys tell me the numbers of each? On the right-hand side, left-hand side, it's fairly easy. So what do we got? We have C, we've got 8, right? We've got H18, O2. And then for carbon on the right-hand side, they're almost always the same. Carbon, 2 hydrogen, 3 oxygen. Okay, what coefficient do I need in front of the carbon? Carbon appears in only two places. It's out of balance. Let's fix it. So I need an 8. Nice. I'm going to make that change in red. So there's my first change. How many, we've got like 8 carbons here, but how many oxygens are there now? So count up the oxygens on the right-hand side for me. How many oxygens do we have? Good, Johnny, nice. So 8 times 2 is 16, plus 1 is 17. Okay, don't balance oxygen yet. Go back now and do hydrogen, because oxygen appears in three places, and we don't want to balance it just yet. It's a diatomic, we're going to save it for last. So we need a coefficient to put in front of the water to balance the hydrogen. We have 18 hydrogens over here. What coefficient do I need in front of the water? Nine. Good. That's my second change. That gives me 18. Recount the oxygens for me. How many oxygens do I have at this point? So we've got the 9 that we just put in front of it, but we've also got 8 times 2, 25. So now what I need is I need 25 oxygens on the left-hand side. So what is the coefficient that I'm going to put in front of the oxygen over here? If I put 12 times 2, is going to be 24. And 24 is not matching up yet. So it can't be 12. I need a number that is going to give me 25 oxygens. So if I need an odd number, the way to get the odd number is to take the subscript here and to put it in the denominator. And then the number that you need, we take this number and we stick that number in the numerator. And then when we multiply 25 halves by 25, or 25 halves by 2, this is now 2 times 25 over 2. The 2s cancel. And I'm now at 25. Does that help to see how it works? So we take our odd number. Odd number goes in the numerator. We take our denominator here, put it in the denominator, and that fraction times 2 gives me the 25. Now, because it's balanced, but a fractional coefficient, now I must clear the fraction. So the last step is to clear the fraction. This was step number 3. The last step is to clear the fraction. And the way that I clear the fraction is I take that denominator again, and I move that denominator out to the front end. And that multiplies by everything. Each coefficient gets multiplied by that number. And then I rewrite that equation. So that is going to be 2C8H18 plus 2502 goes to form 2 times 8, which is 16 CO2 and 18 H2O. And that's our finished equation. And the balance should be preserved by multiplying by 2. That's right. Okay. So the only other thing, good. The only other thing that I would say in terms of balancing chemical equations is to go back to the first one that we balanced. Let me take you back for a minute. Let's look at this one. Look at how many things I needed to keep track of. I needed to keep track of iron, nitrogen, oxygen, sodium, hydrogen, and there may be more. This is a specific type of equation. Do you guys recognize what type of equation this is? If you were to put a name to it, what this equation is? Do you remember the different types of chemical equations? There's acid-base, there's redox, there are single replacement, double replacement, combustion. Remember all those different equation types? This fits into a specific type. This type is what's called double displacement or double replacement. Let me take this equation and I'll rewrite it down here. And let's look at another way to balance this equation. So this is just balancing of a specific type of equation. Balancing double displacement. In double displacement equations, we have A, B plus C, D goes to form C, B plus AD, and they swap partners. And the partners don't break up. An example is the one that I was looking at earlier. Ferric nitrate combining with sodium hydroxide to make ferric hydroxide and sodium nitrate. This type of equation, if I follow it, here's A, and where A goes, here's B, and B is this entire thing, and where B goes, and then I have C and D. So let's say that this is C, and finally D. I don't think I used blue yet, so let's use blue for the hydroxide and where hydroxide goes. Okay, so what's happening here is that the species are staying together and not breaking up. The nitrate is a nitrate over here. The hydroxide is a hydroxide over here. They are swapping partners such that the sodium is going with the nitrate and the iron is going with the hydroxide. And because of the way that they are staying together, the polyatomics are staying together. Because the polyatomics stay together, we can group them together in the balancing. So in other words, when I go to balance this equation, FeNO3 three times plus sodium hydroxide goes to form ferric hydroxide plus sodium nitrate, I can balance this equation this way. Iron, nitrate, sodium, and hydroxide. And I can balance it just with its four things. And now keeping track is a whole lot easier because now there are 1, 3, 1, and 1. The 3 that I have chosen is the subscript that is telling me how many of those nitrates there are. This alleviates trying to count all the oxygens, which got complicated the first time. And on the other side, I've got 1 iron, 1 nitrate, 1 sodium, and 3 hydroxides. The counting is so much simpler because we're keeping the polyatomics grouped together, and that makes the balancing simpler. So watch how easy it is to balance now. Now all I need to do to balance is treat it as a group. There are 3 nitrates. I need 3 nitrates over here. So I put a 3 coefficient. That gives me 3 nitrates and 3 sodiums. Chase the change. Go back and balance the sodium. 3 sodiums. That's number 2. That gives me 3 sodiums and 3 hydroxides. Boom. Done. Look how easy the counting is. Significantly speeds up balancing double displacement reactions. Makes it so that there's a lot less possible errors. Now you can only do this if the double displacement keeps all the polyatomics together. If the polyatomics break up at any point, then you can't do this anymore. This only works if the polyatomics stay together on both sides. But it can really help with those double displacements. Let me show you another double displacement where we can keep them together. Somebody brought this one into office hours. Let me see if I can remember exactly what it was. It was iridium. Let me go back and look. Iridium bromide and silver acetate. Iridium bromide and silver acetate. And they go to form, now these are each aqueous, they go to form silver bromide, which becomes a solid and precipitates out, and iridium acetate, C2H3O2. And that has a 3 in it there. Okay, so one way of balancing this would be to look at it and say, all right, I've got iridium, I've got bromine, I've got silver, I've got carbon, I've got hydrogen, I've got oxygen. But that's going to be really hard to do. What's better to do is to recognize that this is a double displacement. Iridium is going with acetate, silver is going with bromide, and to keep them grouped together. So what we do is we do an iridium, and to remind myself that I'm doing double displacement, I like to include their charges, though the charges aren't really necessary. Silver and acetate, C2H3O2, which is a polyatomic with a negative charge. And then to make that same list on the right-hand side, same order. And then tally up how many you have of each. Iridium 1, bromide 3, silver 1, and acetate, there's only one acetate on the left. On the right-hand side, there is one iridium, there is one bromide, one silver, and there are 3 acetates. Again, the 3 is coming from the subscript multiplying by the whole acetate. So now when I want to balance it, iridium is balanced already, leave it alone. Bromide is out of whack, it appears in 2 places. I need a coefficient in front of the silver, which is going to allow me to balance the bromide. That coefficient is going to be a 3. That's the first thing I'm changing. That multiplies by the bromide and by the silver. Chase the change. Go back and fix silver now that you threw silver out of whack. You'll need a 3 coefficient in front of the silver. That multiplies by the silver, and it multiplies by the whole of the acetate. So that gives me 3 acetates. And notice that we balanced it very quickly. Just in 2 steps. Now, sometimes a double displacement like this will take a couple more steps, and I can show you just one more tool that can be helpful. Let me pick one more, unless there's any questions. See if there's any questions. You guys are being sort of quiet again. Everything's looking okay? All right. So let me give you another double displacement. Let me choose, let's see, I've done iron. Trying to think of a good one where I get precipitations, iron, lead, silver, tin 2. Let's do tin with a nitrate. And we'll add that together with a sodium phosphate, which is going to make tin 2 phosphate, and sodium nitrate. Okay. This is aqueous, solid, and aqueous. This again is a double displacement reaction. And we have tin, which is a 2+, nitrate, which is a -, sodium, which is a +, and phosphate, which is a 3-. Same order. Okay, so what happens with a problem like this is the starting off place. I can see where this one actually is a little bit easier than some of the other ones that I might have chosen to start off with. Sometimes what we look at it and we say, all right, maybe I want to start with nitrate instead of starting with tin. And if I were to start with nitrate and I would see that I have 2 nitrates, oh, we got to do our tally over here. So this would be 1, nitrate is 2, sodium is 3, phosphate is 1, tin is 3, nitrate is 1, sodium is 1, and phosphate is 2. So if for some reason I didn't start with tin, if for some reason I started with nitrate, and I went over and I balanced the nitrate, and that gave me 2 nitrates, and it gave me 2 sodiums, and I chased the change, and I realize, oh, I've got 3 over here. And something's already wrong because it would be hard to come back and try to figure out how I'm going to get 2 on this side of my sodiums when I've already got 3. This type of problem can oftentimes be recognized in this. These guys are going together here and here. Notice that they're in a 1-to-1 ratio. But these come out at 3 and these come out at 2. So if one of them is a package that is coming with 2 of them and the other is a package that is coming with 3 of them, and I need them to go together in a 1-to-1 ratio, then what I need is some common multiple of the 2 and 3. Or 2 times 3, which equals 6. And so one of the ways of balancing this is recognizing that I'm going to need 3 of these guys and 2 of these guys in order to make 6 of these guys. And that whole balancing thing can sometimes be seen as one whole step of taking an odd and even number and getting a multiple and combining them together. And so that little step right there gave me 3 tins, it gave me 6 nitrates, it gave me 6 sodiums, and it gave me 2 phosphates. And I almost sort of balanced it by recognition in one step, by realizing that I had 2 things that needed to come together in a 1-to-1 ratio, but they came out of packages that had 2 and packages that had 3. Now, we certainly could have balanced this the other way, and it would have worked out just fine. I could have started by recognizing I needed 3 tins and start with the 3. That would have given me 6 nitrates, chase the change, put a 6 in front of the nitrate. That also gives me 6 sodiums, chase the change, put a 2 in front of the sodium here. And then that gives me 2 phosphates, and I'm done. So the standard process would have worked, but sometimes a recognition that this is the issue that you're facing allows you to do it in slightly less steps and just seeing that can occur. And sometimes you can run into problems of needing to do more than 4 steps because you have to backtrack a little bit if you didn't realize that was happening. You didn't realize that was going on. Okay. Questions. Other balancing examples that you might have had difficulty with. Are there any particular problems that you're having difficulty with from class that you would like to see balanced, or to see if there's other tools that I might be able to throw at you with more difficult problems? Anything from Lucas or anything from Cisco?
that you guys are struggling with. Now, we'll tell you that there are some problems, balancing problems, where the set of tools that I've given you, namely all of these balancing sort of rules, my six steps, sometimes those six steps do not work for all problems. And there are some that are just uniquely challenging to solve. And we need another sort of math tool in order to try to solve some of the most difficult ones. Those types of problems don't usually find their way into Chem3. Those types of problems are generally more Chem1A or Chem1B type problems than they are Chem3 problems. So these six steps usually solve everything that you run into in Chem3 and usually do it in four steps or less. And if you're taking more than four steps, then what I would say as helpful hints, if you find it's taking more than four steps, here's what you should do. Number one, recount all atoms. Number two, recheck subscripts. With problem source. Either the book or the problem set or however it was handed to you. So recheck all the subscripts within the problem source. And make sure that everything, all the subscripts are the way that they're supposed to be. Third step would be to start over. And follow rules. Most of the time, what's happened is you miscounted. So when we say recount all atoms, what I'm really saying there is watch those in multiple places. These are things that are like CO2 plus H2O, and how the oxygen here appears in that place and that place, and that you're making sure that you're counting them all correctly. If that fails and you are counting them all correctly, then go back and recheck the subscripts with the problem source. And make sure that the source problem is the same as you're working on paper. And if that fails, then start over and really just pedantically follow the steps, the balancing steps, and try to go through it all over again. Okay, so those are your three checks if a problem is going wrong. Okay. All right, did anybody find any problems that they were struggling with that they wanted me to try and do? Anything from class? Were you guys looking back to find particularly challenging problems? Doesn't sound like you guys have anything. Maybe this is a good spot for a break. And we can take a 5-minute break here, and you can look back and see if you have any particularly challenging problems that you'd like me to attempt to show you how to go through and do them. And if not, then after the break, we can start to put some of the skill sets together and start to bring some stoichiometry together with some of these types of problems. Sound like a plan? All right, let's take our 5-minute break here. I'll see you back at 2:05.
Another day, another night got me thinking. What is it with him? He's naturally moving slow.
dreaming. Surrounded by friends, it's got to end. I need to know.
All right, reining it back in here. Music is now stopped. All right, did anybody find any problems they wanted to work on? Before I start to create some other types of problems that we can do here? Doesn't sound like it. Sounds like you guys are willing to let me go on and do my own thing here. And no other balancing issues that seem to give you guys the skill sets that you needed. You don't foresee any sort of balancing skills that we didn't cover, or that at least that gives you all of the skill sets that you need. Balancing is really not all that hard. It just is a set of rules. And once you understand what the set of rules are and you just follow through with the set of rules, then it generally is pretty simple for all the different types of problems. Okay, so the other thing that was coming up was the other types of things that go along with balancing chemical equations. So usually when we do balancing chemical equations, there are other types of problems that fit in with this. So balancing chemical equations goes along with stoichiometry. These are the mass to mole conversions. They can go along with percent yield. They can go along with limiting reagent problems. So all of these types can be combined with balancing chemical equation problems. And what they do is they give you the unbalanced chemical equation. And then they give you additional information and ask you to complete one of these types of problems along with including the balancing of the chemical equation that needs to happen. And it sounds like you may not have done limiting reagent problems yet. It sounds like you might sort of be in this zone right now where you might be in the stoichiometry and in the percent yield types of problems. That can often be the case. So let's maybe take it from a stoichiometry perspective and look at a stoichiometry type problem and what might happen. Let's see how much room I've got here. So let's do balancing chemical equation in stoichiometry. Oftentimes I like to do these from a combustion type of problem. So let's say that, that if 3.67 grams of, let's make it propane, and I'll give you the formula, which is C3H8, is combusted
with excess oxygen gas. How many grams of carbon dioxide gas will be produced? Okay, so a couple of things in this problem. Number one, this word excess. When we say excess oxygen, all that means is that we have more oxygen than we need. And that means that it's not a limiting reagent problem. So the next thing that we do is we take and we write out the combustion problem. And combustion is always the same. A combustion problem is always CX, HY, and sometimes there's oxygen is in this. So we can say XYZ. And those are the subscripts that go with the component that you're burning. You combine that with O2, and you produced the same two products, CO2 and H2O. This is the format of a combustion problem. And so we always write out these three things are always the same. The hydrocarbon is burned and it produces oxygen, CO2, or excuse me, the hydrocarbon is burned with oxygen and it produces CO2 and H2O. So what we do is we take the component that they're giving us and we combine it. So that's C3H8. And we combine it with oxygen and we go to form CO2 and H2O. So number one, we write the equation. Write the unbalanced equation. Number two, we balance it. So to balance the equation, carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, carbon, hydrogen, oxygen. We go through and we balance it the same way that we did before. It takes, I should start my tally here. I'm sorry. 3, 8, 2, 1, 2, and 3. So it takes a 3 coefficient to give 3 carbons. That gives 3 times 2 is 6, plus 1 is 7, 7 oxygens. We then give 4 of the hydrogens. So that gives me 8. 4 times 2 is 8. And then go back and recount. So the 3 times 2 is 6, plus 4 is 10. So that's now 10 oxygens. I come back and I pick up a 5 coefficient here. That gives me 10 oxygens. Okay, so that's the balanced chemical equation. And maybe what I should have done is to copy that and paste that here. So I started with my unbalanced and then I balanced it. Number three, the third step is to use the balanced equation to parse the problem. So here's what that looks like. We take the balanced chemical equation, C3H8 plus 5O2 goes to make 3CO2 plus 4H2O. And under the equation, we take and we add the different things that come out of the problem. So one of the givens in the problem is this guy, 3.67 grams of propane and excess oxygen. So I come down here and I say 3.67 grams and excess grams. And what they wanted to know was they wanted to know grams of CO2. And so I have used, so there was my question was, how many grams of carbon dioxide gas will be produced as a product? So there's my question. How many grams? So what I'm doing is I'm doing a stoichiometry problem that is going from grams of C3H8, propane, to grams of CO2. The fourth thing that I do is I write out my roadmap. So I'm going to go from grams of C3H8, and I'm going to go to moles of C3H8. I'll go to moles of CO2, and I'll go to grams of CO2. And that's my roadmap for solving my stoichiometry. Now, how did I write out that roadmap so fast? Because that's the general stoichiometry roadmap. So if you remember the general stoichiometry roadmap, this whole thing gets a whole lot easier. That general roadmap is other mass units of A goes to grams of A, goes to moles of A, goes to moles of B, goes to grams of B, and that goes to other mass units of B. Where this part is the mole bridge. And out of this, we could come out of this in other various ways. We could come from atoms or molecules of A, or atoms or molecules of B. We could come from a pure substance where this could be milliliters of A, and we can go down into grams of A using the density. Or we could go from grams of B to milliliters of B, and that could be using the density of B. With gas laws, we could come into moles of A using the pressure of A, the volume of A, and the temperature of A, and we could use PV equals NRT, where N is the number of moles of A. So this could be gas A, or we could come out of moles B and we can go into gas B using PV equals NRT, where we use the pressure of B, the volume of B, and the temperature of B, where moles B would represent NB. When we get to solutions, there will be other ways of going in and out of this with solutions and solution chemistry. And so this general stoichiometry roadmap just continues to grow as we do other types of chemistry. And usually what I do is I take these and I put these into different colors, representing the different places that you can go. And so this so far represents everything that we've kind of covered in the class to date. And so you just need to decide where you're starting and where you're going. And so I was starting in grams,
and I was going 2 grams. So starting in grams, I started here at grams of A, and I was requested to go to grams of B. And so my roadmap goes straight on through. Grams A, to moles B, to grams B. And so that's where my roadmap came from, and that's how I was able to do that so quickly, is that roadmap is in my head. And I know that roadmap may not be in your head, but it doesn't have to be because you're doing an online class. So take that roadmap, write that roadmap down, and put it right next to where you're doing your homework all the time so that you know where to grab it. And the more you use it, the more it will get into your head. Okay, so there's another good tip on the roadmap. Okay, now once we have the roadmap, now we need the other parts to solving the problem. We need to know what these arrows represent, right? So what do these arrows represent? Well, this first one here represents molar mass. And that's the molar mass of C3H8. The second one represents the coefficients in the balanced equation. We already balanced the equation, so we have those coefficients. Those coefficients are 1 and 3. And the last thing that we need is we need the molar mass of CO2. So our next step, step number 5, is to calculate any of the required equalities that we need to complete the equation. So we need C3H8, and we need CO2. So this is going to be 3 times 12.01 for the carbon plus hydrogen, which is going to be 8 times 1.008. And for carbon here, 1 times 12.01, and for oxygen, 2 times 16.00 grams per mole. Let's get those really quick. This is going to be 36.03, and this is going to be 8.064. And so we're adding those up, 4, 9, 0, 6, and 8, 14, 44.09. Did I do that right? 3 times 12.01 plus 8 times 1.008. And I got an error because I've got 2 addition signs. 3 times 12, oh, darn it, 3 times 12.01 plus 8 times 1.008. It's the non-textile thing of the calculator this way, because you don't actually hit a button. Sig figs wise, that would be our sig fig. So this is going to be 44.09 grams per mole. And over here, we're going to have 12.01 plus 32.00. So we're going to have 44.01 grams per mole. That one requires no sig figs to work out. So we've got our molar masses now. And now we can go ahead and we can solve the problem, right? So now, number 6, write out the problem. So it was 3.67 grams of C3H8 times for every 44.09 grams of C3H8, I get 1 mole C3H8
times now through the stoichiometry, we go back and we look at the coefficients. It is 1 mole of C3H8 to 3 moles CO2. So these coefficients are what are said to be molar coefficients. And we treat them the same way that we treat subscripts, that they are molar ratios, just in the same way that subscripts are molar ratios. So it is for every 1 mole of C3H8, I get 3 moles of CO2. And then for every 1 mole of CO2, I get 44.01 grams. Calculate that out, 3.67 divided by 44.09 times 3 times 44.01. 10.990022. This is going to be grams of CO2. And I believe I've got enough decimals there to go through and decide on sig figs. So step 7 would be sig figs. And we've got 3, 4. Molar ratios are always exact. We've got 4. And so the smallest number is 3. And we will be rounding to the 10th position. And so our answer is going to be 11.0 grams CO2 produced. And that's how we would use it in a stoichiometry problem, in terms of using the balanced chemical equation. So our steps are number one, write the unbalanced equation. Number two, balance the equation. Number three, use the balanced equation to parse the problem. This is my favorite step right here. This is what I say is really a critical step. Using the balanced chemical equation as a structure to help you to understand the problem. So you write down each of the things that are given to you, and you write down what your unknown is, and then you figure out where you're starting and where you're going. Now, that's not your roadmap per se, but it's the beginning of your roadmap, because it really helps you to visualize where it is that you're going with this. And it takes all of this word problem, it takes all of this and reduces it to this guy. And now, conceptually, that's much easier to deal with. So use the balanced equation to parse the problem. Develop your roadmap, which comes from the general roadmap. Calculate any required equalities. Write out your problem. Do your sig figs. All right, how did that look? What questions are coming up, if anything? Does this seem like kind of where you guys have been going? Is this the right direction? I know that somebody early on mentioned percent yield. Percent yield generally doesn't go along with a balanced chemical equation. We could do a percent yield problem, and I can talk about percent yield a little bit. But for the most part, balancing chemical equations, this is the extent of balancing chemical equations and why we need to balance them. Because the chemical equations don't come to us balanced all the time. So we need to know how to balance them in order to do a problem like this. All right, so do we want to see or spend a few minutes on percent yield? Or do you feel like you guys have everything you need? And I think that what I'm going to put up is I have a balancing chemical equations worksheet. It's not hard. It's not super challenging. It could probably be done in less than half an hour for all the problems that are on it. I think the only thing that I would add here, let me give you one more little tip in terms of balancing chemical equations, because it comes up in the worksheet that I'm going to give you. Sometimes a balancing chemical equations can be given in words. example. Hydrogen gas is reacted with oxygen gas to produce H2O. Or maybe even they would just say water. Provide a balanced chemical reaction or balanced chemical equation for this reaction. Okay, and so the thing that I want to address with these two, hydrogen gas and oxygen gas. This is where people tend to make mistakes. Hydrogen gas is H2. It's diatomic. And oxygen gas is O2. It's diatomic. And so you're adding these two together to make water, H2O. So how do I know what is diatomic and what is not diatomic? What is not? And the answer to that is that we have a couple of, I can't remember what they're called, ways of remembering the diatomic elements. Hofbräunkel. Or Brinkelhoff. Usually they do them in all caps. These represent the elements that are diatomic. It is H2, O2, F2, Br2, I2, N2, and Cl2. And so here, Br, I, N, chlorine, Cl, hydrogen, oxygen, fluorine. It's a way of remembering the elements that exist on the periodic table as diatomic. Now, what I do, I mean, those are helpful. What I sort of remember is their location in the periodic table. Hydrogen up in the upper left-hand corner. Then you have nitrogen, oxygen, fluorine, chlorine, bromine, iodine. That these guys in the periodic table exist in an L sort of shape, starting with nitrogen, then going down the halogens. And so as long as you remember hydrogen and throw hydrogen into there, if you remember that L shape, starting with nitrogen, oxygen, fluorine, chlorine, bromine, iodine, which is all the halogens, these are all the elements that exist in diatomic form from the periodic table. And so when you're doing one in words and it's given to you in its elemental state, then hydrogen gas, nitrogen gas, oxygen, fluorine as a gas. Chlorine is also a gas. Bromine is a liquid at room temperature. And iodine is a solid. So these are in their elemental state, and this is H2, N2, O2, F2, Cl2, Br2, and I2. So the only two that you really got to be careful of, really, in terms of liquid or gas or solid, is really these two guys. Is the bromine and the iodine, and everything else is a gas. And those gases are diatomic, right? So when you're using those gases, you need to make sure that you write it down as diatomic and not monatomic. Otherwise, you'll get the equation incorrect. So in balancing the hydrogen gas and the oxygen gas, in balancing that equation out, H2 plus O2, goes to make H2O, what we're going to need is we're going to need two of these. So hydrogen, oxygen, there was two and two, there was two and one. So the two changes this guy to a two, it changes that guy to a four. And then my second coefficient comes out here, that changes that to a four, and now I'm balanced. And that's my balanced chemical equation. So you just need to watch that. All the other elements are monatomic. So that I could do an equation that looks like this. Let me give you one more. Iron is reacted with carbon dioxide. Oh, no, I got it. Not iron, let's make it different. Iron 3 oxide is reacted with carbon in a blast furnace. To produce iron and carbon dioxide. Write a balanced chemical equation. Okay, so we've got iron 3 oxide, so that's going to be iron 3 plus together with oxide 2 minus, and I've got to balance those out. So that means that I'm going to need 3 of the oxides and 2 of the irons. So that gives me 6 negatives and 6 positives. So that's going to be Fe2O3. There's iron 3 oxide, and then is reacted with carbon. Now, carbon is not one of my diatomics. So as I was going through all these diatomics, hydrogen gas, nitrogen gas, oxygen gas, that was my Hofbräunkel elements. Carbon is not one of those Hofbräunkel elements. And so the carbon comes in here as monatomic. That goes to make iron. Iron is also not one of my diatomics, so it stays singular. Plus carbon dioxide, CO2. And so carbon dioxide is the binary covalent nomenclature. The di tells me that there are two of the oxides with no coefficient in front of the carbon or no prefix in front of the carbon. I know that that's a singular. So carbon dioxide, CO2. And then it's my job to take the equation and to balance the chemical equation. So we would go through the balancing steps now. FeOC, 2, 3, 1. FeOC, 1, 2, 1. And iron is out of whack, but I don't think I want to balance iron yet. Because if I balance iron, it does nothing for oxygen. And really, oxygen is the only thing that's not monatomic. So what I would say is leave these for last because they're monatomic. And they're the easiest thing to balance. So now notice there's something interesting that's happening here. These guys come in threes and the other ones come in twos. So when something comes in threes and something comes in twos, how many do I want to do? How do I want to resolve this? What coefficient do you think I want to put out here in front of the iron two, or the iron three oxide? What coefficient do you think goes out in front here? Two, yeah, exactly. If we put a two out here, that multiplies this 3, turns it into 6. This turns it into 4. Now, give me a coefficient out in front of here that's also going to give me 6 oxygens, balance the oxygen. 3. Excellent. That gives me 6, and it gives me 3 carbons. Now you can go and you can use these monatomics to balance the last part of it, right? So I need to get 3 carbons over here. That's my third change. And I need to get 4 irons over here. That's my fourth step. And 4 and 4, 6 and 6. I forgot to put in my 3 there, but that was done. And I'm done. So there was one more sort of balancing tip that hit monatomic versus diatomic versus polyatomic. And how to know which is which and when to use what in terms of balancing the chemical equations. All right, I think, unless you want me to do something on percent yields, I don't know. Maybe that's something that we save for stoichiometry and save for next time. Seems like we hit everything that everybody needed here in terms of balancing chemical equations. So this was a good session. All right, I'm gonna put up a worksheet for balancing chemical equations. I said that's about a 30-minute commitment. I think you can do it in about 30 minutes, given everything that I've given you here today. You should be able to race through that. And I'm still gonna get that PV equals NRT exercise up, which I think is about another 30-minute commitment. So not too exhaustive on your time for this next week coming up. All right. I think that's all I got for you. So let's go ahead and call it a day. And if anybody wants to stay online and they have any questions, I'm happy to deal with questions individually. So I'm going to go ahead and stop the recording though, and I'll see you guys next week.
Thank you.
You're welcome.